Have you ever wondered what it takes to become the kind of leader people will actually follow? That's what Jake and I are going to explore here today, and we're excited to have you along for this journey. Jake, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. You know, I was just sitting here thinking the other day about, you know, what it takes to really become a leader that people actually want to follow. And the main reason it came up to me is because I thought about my wife and my job for me and how for a long time I didn't realize that I'm actually in a leadership position when I think about that. And I think that's one thing that maybe a lot of guys miss is that they don't feel like a leader until they get the title. But, you know, really at the end of the day, it is, I'm a leader in my home and I'm a leader at my work, no matter what I do. So I just started thinking about, you know, how to become a better leader so people actually follow me. I kind of sit here and I'm stuck in this reactive leadership almost where like when a problem arises, I kind of take that problem on and I try to solve it the best way I can, but it's not a proactive. So at the end of the day, I'm left feeling, you know, why is nobody actually following me? You know, I'm left feeling like, you know, a little bit like stuck in a sense of, you know, leading isn't necessarily fixing problems, but I've felt that way in a long time. And, you know, I heard this really interesting quote the other day of management is doing the right, or management is doing things right, but leadership is doing the right things. It was from this guy called Peter Drucker who wrote this book, really famous book, The Executive or The Effective Executive. But, you know, that kind of hit me and I want to be a more effective leader in the decisions to do the right things, not just the effectiveness of doing them. You know what I mean?
That's good. So I think that when I think of these kinds of concepts and these kinds of questions, and maybe it's come out in past conversations, but I always try and think of it from the high level first, right? Like I think so often it's easy to get stuck in the weeds. That's why for me, I don't typically have like the five steps or the frameworks or this or that, because to me, I think that this question isn't so much a question of how do I, in the sense of steps to take. That's what a lot of people will do. And there's a place for that. Like there's a place for books that will give you these five steps to becoming a better leader or whatever, but that's just not how I work. It's not how my brain works. It's not how I think. I think of like all the way up at the, you know, Goodyear blimp height, you know, where you can see the whole playing field. What is it that we're actually trying to do? And to me, I think that when it comes to leadership and many other things for that matter, it's not so much what do I do, it's who do I become, right? Like, because leadership really, in my opinion, and there's certainly people who have, you know, who have more qualifications than I do to talk about it. But when I think back in my life, like when I was young, I was always the team captain on the baseball team, at least through high school. And then, and each step along the way, I found myself in positions of leadership, but I don't know that I was ever going out, like trying to make sure I was the leader. I think that my focus was always, who am I becoming, right? Like, who, am I challenging myself? I think a lot of times people, they get caught up in trying to become somebody for somebody else or trying to prove something for somebody else. And so to me, I think from my standpoint, leadership was always about like, how do I become the best I can be? And we can get into, and we will get into some things that I think the core tenets maybe of at the 50,000 foot view, what makes a great leader. But I think to me, the start of it is like, Jake, when you think about it, what is leadership?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I feel like the longest time I was ingrained with this idea from raised up that like the leaders are the people with the right answers. You know, the leaders are the people with, you know, the confidence to make decisions when there's a lack of it. But, you know, the older I've gotten, the more I feel like that's maybe part of it, but not all of it. I feel like, you know, when I think of a really great leader, it's somebody who I can follow because I know that they have my best interest in mind. Mm-hmm. In terms of, I know that what they're looking at is going to lead to the outcomes that I believe is good for me. Like I think of like, you know, electing a president. It's like, that's the whole idea of electing our leader is looking for those things that, okay, is this in my long-term purview of what I'm actually looking for?
It's good. I'm just writing a few notes. One of the things I wrote down, and for me, I think my journey in leadership, and this is again where I think maybe is a little bit different, maybe not, but when I zoom out, I go, what if I want to become a great leader, what's the best way to do it? And I think, like, just like anything else, it's like find a model that you think is worth emulating and figure out what it is about that model that's worth emulating. And for me, it was maybe not so much when I was younger, but as I've gotten older, at each step, it's become like, in order to become a leader, I have to actually first become a better follower. And, you know, that's like when I was in college, I got a degree in organizational communication at one of the top communication schools in the nation. And I'll never forget, like, one of the things that they taught us is they said, you're not born a leader. You're made into a leader. You become a leader. And one of the things that's required in order to become a leader is that you have to understand that you're not always supposed to lead, because great leaders are also great followers. And so for me, I always am sitting there, I'm thinking, who can I follow? Who do I want to follow? And for me, it's Jesus, right? Like, when I really think about, like, because there's macho leadership in the world today, there's rough and tumble leadership, there's all these kinds of leadership that, you know, makes you think that, the more macho I am, the better leader I'm going to be. But if you think about in the world, like Nelson Mandela as an example, you know, if you listen to him, it's not like he was coming across trying to be macho, but the word I wrote down was magnetic, right? People who are great leaders, they're not trying to lead. They're not trying to prove anything. They're not trying to inspire people necessarily. They're just living in ways that's magnetic. Like, people are drawn to them, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think about Jesus. He started out with this ragtag renegade group of 12 guys, and then minus one after Judas did what he did. And that message and what he came to do spread all the way across the world. Why? Because it was magnetic, because there was something about it that reached down, that touched people in a way that they were starving for. And I think the greatest leaders today, right? And maybe not in the short term. And this goes back to, and I'm going to harken back to this idea of the investor's approach. Like, great leaders are not speculator style leaders, right? Speculator style leaders are the rah-rah, the like, hey, we're going to hammer this in for the short term. We're going to get a short term bump in our inspiration and all those kinds of things. But to me, a long term, an investing approach leader is someone who says, hey, like, in the short term, it might actually not look that good. It's definitely not going to look as good as the rah rah guy. But in the long term, like, the tortoise is going to beat the hare. And so for me, I think become a great follower, become magnetic. And we can talk about, well, how does that happen? A couple other things I wrote down that I think are probably privy, they're probably common amongst most all leaders, is authenticity, right? Consistency. Great leaders are consistent. That's why people can count on them, because they're not here today and gone tomorrow. They're not up and down all the time. They're not wishy-washy. They're authentic, right? They'll speak the truth, but then they're consistent. And then the last one I wrote down, and I'm sure there's more, is they're courageous. Right? You want to be a leader, you got to be willing to do the hard things. In my organization, in my life, one of the things I always say, and this is where, like, I think that the number one skill that every single person should focus on getting better at, even in the crazy world that we live in with all the technology and all this stuff, the one skill that will deliver the highest returns on the investment, no matter what it is, no matter what you're comparing it against, in my opinion, is to become a better communicator. Right? Because the way that we interact is communicating, nonverbal, verbal. And so for me, you go magnetic, authentic, courageous. And then the last one that I was saying all that for is, are you able to handle conflict? Right? I always say there's three types of people. There's the kind of person who loves conflict. They feed on conflict and they become confrontational. Then you have the people who are deathly afraid of conflict and they're passive, and then anytime there is conflict, they run. Usually those two people on the two poles, they really hit a ceiling. They get to the point where they just can't press on any further, because the guy who loves conflict, nobody wants to be around, because not everybody likes conflict. And then the person who's unwilling to engage in conflict, they hit a ceiling because, like, at some point you can't actually figure out who they are. They can't even move further because they're afraid of conflict. And then there's the person that's in the middle who says, I'm not going to revel in conflict, but I'm also not going to avoid conflict. I'm going to find a way to deal with conflict in a way that's productive. And so you think about, like, for you in construction on the job, you probably see it every day. The guy who's just always yelling at somebody, always kind of trying to make sure he gets his point across. And eventually people are like, I don't like that guy. He's a bully. And so what do? They just hide from him. They just do the stuff and try and avoid him. That's what people do with bullies. They just try and, like, get around the roadblock. And then you probably have dealt with the other guy. He won't pick up his phone. He knows right. He's not there on time. He knows there's not something's not going right. And he knows there's going to be conflict. And so he just avoids it. And then guess what? You don't want to work with him either. But the subs that you probably appreciate the most, the ones that you probably work together with the best, are the ones who, yeah, there's a problem. We're going to deal with it. And you know what? In that, if they're leaders themselves, they'll be authentic. They'll be consistent. They'll be courageous in the sense that if maybe they screwed up and they got to eat a few bucks, they'll deal with it. They'll do the right thing. Leaders do the right thing. So I don't know if those are helpful, but as I think about it, you know, we didn't talk about this before we started this conversation, but those are some of the things that I really think for me have helped to, you know, and I'm still trying to practice and develop all those things myself, but I think those are things that no matter who you are can help you be a better leader.
Yeah, that's interesting. I really liked your point on the magnet. But, you know, it brings me to a question of I think about the question of, is there a necessity for a willingness to be led by the person? Like you taught about, or you just spoke about it, about being a better follower, a better listener, you know? Is there a willingness to be led, or does every great leader, can they lead anybody?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that a great leader can lead everybody, you know. There's always going to be people who want to hold out. And so I think the thing is like, and maybe the question really is, correct me if I'm wrong or if you see it differently, but let's take your job for example. In your role, can you lead everybody that you have to deal with when you don't get to pick the people who you get to deal with? Is that kind of what you're asking me?
Yeah, exactly. I think like, you know, in my job, there's people aged. I mean, I'm working with 18-year-olds up to 75-year-olds, you know, and it's just a huge gamut of people that work on the job. And it, you know, it's more of a personality type that I see sometimes of like, they're more receptive to, let's say, constructive criticism. But I don't know if it's like a me problem about how I'm approaching it. Maybe, like you said, and maybe I'm communicating in a wrong way to that specific type of person, or if it's their personality of, you know, maybe they're not receptive to receiving constructive criticism or being led. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. So this is a good question. So this takes me back to when I said that communicating, becoming a better communicator is really the key. And it really, you know, we might be hitting on something else here, but one of the things I've always said, you've probably heard this in conversations before. That's not what I meant. You ever heard that before?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I say, anytime you hear, that's not what I meant, then you didn't do a good job delivering it. Okay? Because what happens is if you're going to communicate with someone, the onus is on you for how it's received. Okay, and that sounds totally backwards, and nobody likes to hear that because they're like, well, how can I control how the other person's going to receive it? And it's like, well, because a great communicator, just like a great leader, is first and foremost a great listener. They got to read the room. They got to know the audience. They got to understand the person. They got to have empathy for the person they're going to lead or communicate with, right? And so on one hand, like, a great leader isn't afraid to upset someone or piss someone off or rub someone the wrong way, right? But the best leaders aren't out there looking to, like, piss somebody off. Instead, what they're out there to do is they're out there looking to say, like, let's take one of the guys in your example. And maybe you know that, hey, this guy doesn't like constructive criticism. Great. Well, then as a leader, that's your challenge. Your challenge is, I have to understand this guy well enough. I have to build enough rapport. I have to get this guy to know, like, and trust me, not because I'm manipulative, but because if I'm going to lead, if I'm going to communicate effectively, that's what's required, right? So my challenge here is to actually get to know this guy in a way that I can learn how I need to communicate with him, because I'm going to have some level of constructive criticism in such a way that he will receive it as I need him to receive it, right? And so what happens is, answering your question that we started this with, can you lead anybody? The answer is still not everybody, but most people. Because at some point, you might have to fire the guy because he might not be the right fit, right? And this is why I always say, like, think about divorce. I've always said this. My family's been through a few divorces in my life. And I always say, divorce is always the result of one person in the marriage who is unwilling to change, right? Most of the time, somebody's willing to change and somebody else isn't willing to change. And that's where divorce happens. Well, on the job, it's really no different, right? You as the project manager or the superintendent, you might be going in and saying, hey man, like, I really want to work with you here. This is what you're doing really well. This is what's going well, but this is what's not going so well. This is what we got to get changed. And here's another trick and another tip. The first question we always start to ask when we're a kid is the question, why? And it's the question we never stop asking, but it's the question that most adults think they don't need to answer anymore. And that's why they deal with a lot of conflict in their life. So in this example, we're going to actually say, this is what we need to see differently. And here's why, right? Because if the guy can't get on the same page with you as to the why, then he might not be the right guy. And he might be a guy that on the next job, you don't bring back, right? Because at the end of the day, like, our job as a leader is to explain the vision, which requires an explanation of why, right? And then to cultivate the culture that will bring the vision to fruition, right? To learn the people, to figure out what role people go in what roles, but then also to discern and to judge if they're the right fit or not, right? Because at the end of the day, the hardest part about being a leader is, like, the buck stops with you, right? I mean, not the ultimate buck, but the buck for this job, this thing, it ends with you. And so leaders are willing to make tough choices. Leaders are, they understand, I can't be a people pleaser. I cannot please everybody. I cannot lead everybody, but I can create a culture in which the people who want to be a part of this thing, this vision that we're building, this thing that we're going after, this culture that we're creating, like, they're going to be here. And the people who refuse to change, like in a marriage, who refuse to grow, who refuse to adapt, who refuse to lay their life down a little bit, they just won't get to come along. So I don't know if that helps answer your question, but, like, that's how I think about it.
Yeah. You're digging into something that I think I've been simmering on a while is, you touched a lot on it right there of this culture creation. Just to keep the job site analogy going along, for me, I tend to at least once a week just go up out there and pick up a tool. Just, like, even for if it's an hour or 2 hours, just go out there and pick up a tool and give them a hand where I can. Cause I'm more of an office guy, you know, I'm project management more, but, that has opened a lot of reception for, you know, giving, like, constructive advice to these guys on maybe, you know, like, we have one guy who's probably 72 years old and has been building his entire life, three times as long as I've been alive. And, you know, there's things that I can maybe offer him new advice on. And he's honestly really receptive to it because he understands that I can go out there and I can do his job as well, you know, and I can help him with his job and I can build that sort of mutual respect with him in a way. You know, just to go back to the Bible, I see this a lot, you know, in scripture as well. I feel this feel of respect building. It's like all you can do when you look at Jesus is go, wow, you know, like in that sort of feeling, that sort of, what was the word you used?
Magnetic.
Yeah. Like it brings people to you, the magnetic feeling. And it's just like, I guess there's a lot of leaders in the Bible and, you know, what I would ask is, like, what is the through line for all those leaders that bring that magnetism to them?
I mean, I've never really thought about that particular question before. I think that off the top of my head, when I think about, like, who are the leaders that I follow, it's very often leaders... excuse me, leaders have a level of conviction and that's why, honestly, like, if you think about in the political climate right now, the reason that so many people end up in political positions that probably never should is because they just literally walk around with a confidence and a conviction that is magnetic to most people, Like, think about even the craziest conspiracy theories, right? And I know a lot of them have come true, but think about like the ones that definitely are not true, that are crazy. And these people can still get a following. Why? Because like they are so confident. They have so much conviction. They convey it with so much passion that there is some group of people who will follow them. And so like you think about all these different people that are in the Bible and outside of the Bible, and two things that they all probably share is massive conviction and a high level of confidence. Because if you think about it, most people are not walking around with like that kind of conviction and that kind of confidence. And so they're looking for someone to follow because they're afraid to go where this person with confidence and conviction is willing to go. Like they're going, hey, I'll go behind you. I just don't want to go by myself. And a leader is saying, hey, like I'll blaze the trail and yeah, you can come behind me. And so I think in so many ways, it's like a mindset. Now, I will say that as you gave the example of the 72-year-old, it's like I can remember playing sports and playing all the way through college, and every new team that you go to be a part of, it's the same deal. You know, you're lining up against these two other guys, or maybe if you're an outfielder, there's five other guys and you're all vying for these positions. And you're like, okay, how am I going to win the job? And the first thing you know is, well, if I don't have confidence, like I've already lost. And where does conviction come from? Well, it comes from practice. Like if I haven't practiced, if I haven't put in the time, if I haven't put in the work, I'm not going to be magnetic. I'm not going to be somebody that people look at and go like, man, he's the guy. He deserves the shot. And so I know like sports taught me so much about life. And it's because I think I said this in a past video, but maybe not. It's like, can you imagine if we started doing like a DEI with professional sports? Like nobody would watch them. Right? Because we all know that in sports, just like it should be in the rest of life, but in sports, we want to see the best competitors compete. We want to see the best people on the field. And so I look at it and I go, okay, well, how do you get that level of conviction where you can walk into a job site with a 72-year-old guy who's been doing the trades for 40 years, and how can you actually speak in a way where he respects you, where he's like, yeah, I'm going to listen to this kid. Well, part of it is like in my mind, and I'm not saying this is a recipe for everybody, but like in my mind, the way, because I remember when I bought into my business, commercial real estate, I was 25 years old. I'd been doing it for less than 6 months. And basically every room I walked into was just like that. Like, why would I listen to this kid? But here's the thing. I knew, at least I believed. I believed to the point where I thought I knew that I had spent so much time developing my conviction that I understood investing. I understood the principles. I understood how to apply it to commercial real estate. I understood something that most people in my industry, I really didn't think looked at it this way, that it gave me a level of conviction and confidence that I was like, I don't really care who's in this room. I'm going to compete and I'm going to win. And that's just how I was. And that, now I could have been wrong, but like I'm here 17 years later and things have been going pretty good all in all. And so to me, it's like preparation. Right? Like, I think it's Tony Robbins say perfect. You know, you've heard the saying, practice makes perfect. He goes, no. Perfect practice makes perfect. Mm. And so for me, it was, I really believe that in all the things that I want to be a leader at, that I've put in the work, I've put in the perfect practice, I've put in the time, and that time has given me conviction. That time has given me conviction, and that conviction has given me a confidence. And so I would say, like, if you're working at your job and you're going, wow, nobody respects me. I hear this all the time where a guy's like, I want my wife to respect me. It's like, well, are you respect worthy? Like, are you showing your wife that you're worthy of respect? Or are you just demanding it? Because like, that's the thing that communication taught me is I grew up in a world where I, you know, the leaders in my life, the men in my life, many of the coaches, it was like, hey, this is like the military and you're going to respect me because I said so. And guys in my generation were like, hey, F you, buddy. I'm not going to respect you. And as a matter of fact, I don't even like you. Yeah. And we learned, like, we were the generation that started learning, oh, respect isn't demanded, it's earned, right? And if you really want people to follow you into a fire, you better be willing to show them that you're going to go into the fire first if you have to. And so I don't know. I don't know if that helps at all. But to me, like, those are some of the things that have really impacted my life.
Yeah, to me, that's super interesting. I think of, you know, for me, just one thing to maybe add a question on for that is, you know, if you've ever heard of the saying, the blind leading the blind. you know, I feel like the conviction part of what you just brought up is a really interesting piece. But I would like to add, like, what if I don't have all the answers yet? You know, isn't there like you brought up, you know, doing the hard work and the due diligence to actually create that conviction. But, you know, shouldn't I wait until I have more confidence to lead?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't know that there's a yes or a no answer. I think it, again, man, like, this is why it's about knowing the room. It's about knowing yourself. It's about knowing the people you're leading, right? If you're in a position of leadership and like, let's say you're running a big job, and let's say there's like an $8 million decision on the line. And if it goes wrong, it's a really big problem. And if it goes right, it's great. You know, you can keep on going. And you're like, I'm 24 years old. How do I know which decision to make? Like, do I lead here? Do I follow? Well, if you're already in a position of leadership, people are looking to you to lead. Now, if those people are sitting there going, honestly, I don't know. This guy's pretty young. I don't know if he actually knows. There's literally nothing wrong with. And again, this is where I think so much of leadership in the world is, I gotta puff up my feathers like a peacock and portray strength. Yeah, okay, like, go for it. You can try that. Again, I think that's the speculator's mindset. To me, the investor's approach is saying, hey, guys, I'm not really exactly sure. Here's how I'm thinking about this. I want to get your thoughts. Let's talk about it. Right? So many people are afraid to elicit a response from the people that they're leading because they think it'll make them look weak, right? Well, if you say it the wrong way, it'll make you look weak. But if you actually include people, one of the things I try and do in my company, and it actually drives some people crazy, is I'll say, hey, what do you guys think? I want everybody's opinion. And people are like, why are you doing that? It takes a 10-minute conversation and turns it into 1 hour. And I go, yeah, but the thing that you miss is the thing that most people appreciate the most is feeling like what they have to say matters, is feeling like they have a seat at the table, a voice in the conversation. I still got to make the end decision, but I sure as hell don't want to make it without actually getting the input of the people who are on the ground doing the things that I'm trying to tell them to do better or lead them in a way to do better. And so I think, like, listen, man, you're never going to have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. But leadership isn't about having the answers. Leadership is about being someone, becoming someone who's willing to say, I'm going to go forward even when I'm afraid. I'm going to go forward even when I don't know that I'm making the exact right decision. I'm going to go forward when everyone else is a little bit timid to go forward, right? Like, because if I'm willing to do that when other people won't, then I become magnetic. Not because I'm trying to, but because that's just how the laws of all of it work. And so you could say in a situation, listen, this is where I want to go. This is the vision. This is what I see. But I don't necessarily always know the exact path to get there. So we're going to work on the path together, right? And we're going to build the map together, and then we're going to go. And so the other thing, when it comes to conviction, you also have to be careful, because some people who shouldn't be leaders have massive conviction and massive confidence. Like, I see it all the time on the internet, on YouTube, people saying, hey, buy my course and do this, and I'm going to show you all these things. And, you know, I used to tell your wife all the time when she was growing up, be really careful of who you take advice from, because you should never take advice from people whose life doesn't look the way you want yours to look, right? Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got an idea, but there's only certain people who have the fruit, right? And so if you're trying to decide which leaders to follow, follow the fruit. And if the fruit doesn't look like the kind of fruit you want to eat, then don't follow them, because they might have a lot of conviction. They might have a lot of confidence, but they don't have the goods, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe we could wrap it up with this, because I think the through line through our conversation to this point has really been conviction, but the right conviction. We could use the Tony Robbins example. You know, it's not just practice makes perfect, it's perfect practice makes perfect, right? And that's what I think is what I was kind of getting at, and I'm glad you answered with that, is to be a true effective leader, it's not so much about just getting things done, it's getting the right things done. And, you know, I think if I had one last question to ask you, is like, if I were to wake up tomorrow and I decided tomorrow, man, I just want to be a better leader today, and I want to get from today on, I want to be a better leader. Like, what is the thing I can start doing? Is it building conviction? Is it building respect? Is it communication, or is it all of it?
I would say it's two things that pop into my brain. I think the first thing that holds people back from truly becoming leaders is they just don't believe in themselves. They really don't have the confidence. And so I think the first thing would be to wake up and look at yourself in the mirror, as dumb as it sounds, and tell yourself, I'm capable of leading. I am a leader. Because even if you don't see it yet, the leader is in there. The giant within, as Tony Robbins would say, is in there. And part of bringing that thing out is actually telling yourself, right? Like, I think about the story of King David in the Bible. And this is why identity is so important. Because when he was a kid, right, Samuel came looking to anoint a king, and he didn't know who it was going to be. And the sons came, and he's like, no, none of these are them. There's got to be another one. And then David's dad's like, oh yeah, I got my other son. He's out watching the sheep in the field. He's like, bring him to me. And he comes in, and he's like the runt of the litter. And Samuel says, oh, this is the one. And he anoints David king. They think he was probably around 15 years old. And then after that, he ends up in Saul's palace, and he's playing music for him, right? And so think about this. When David was a kid, nobody even thought about him as an option for what Samuel was looking for. They thought of him as like the runt, the shepherd boy. So everybody in the world in his life was telling him, you're just the runt, the shepherd boy, right? Then he gets into King's palace, and he's known as the musician. And everybody around him is telling him, you're the musician, you're the musician. And then Saul gets mad at him, and then he's chasing him around, and then he's the fugitive. And just think about this. If David ever buys into any of those three identities, do you think he ever becomes king? I don't think he does. But he knew what God had called him. He knew what God had said he was. He was going to be the king. He was going to sit on the royal throne. And it took 15 years, and 15 years later, he became king. 15 years later, he became the guy that God knew he was all along. Right? He knew the seed was in there, and it took 30 years or so of his life for it to actually turn into something that other people could finally see and pick the fruit from. And so I think that's why identity, that's why becoming, that's why believing is the core tenet of our faith, is to say, look in the mirror and say, I know I can lead. I'm capable of leading. God didn't create me to sit here and just follow. God created me for dominion. God created me in a way to have dominion over something, right? And people hear that word and they might think something very different than what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about like rulership in some authoritarian way. What I'm talking about is like, God wants you, Jake, to have some dominion over your family. He wants you to have dominion over the role and the calling that he's put in your life. It's an assignment, and he wants you to have dominion over it, right? And so you have to look in the mirror and believe that you can, believe that you're capable. So I'd say that's the first thing. And then the second thing I would be is like, sharpen your axe, man. Like, learn. You know, knowledge is power. It says in the Bible, people perished for their lack of knowledge. So if people watching this are not where they want to be, if people aren't following them like they desire, if your family isn't following you like you want, like, what are you learning? How are you growing? How are you showing them? Right? How are you showing people around you that, man, like, this guy's smart. This guy knows some stuff. Like, this guy's teaching me things. Right? Because if we're not constantly learning, if we're not constantly pushing ourselves, and then we're not applying what we're learning and applying the way that we're pushing ourselves through the confidence that we're giving ourselves every day, then we wake up, we're never going to make progress. But if we do those two things, or if we at least start with those two things, I think you'll start seeing things start to change reasonably quickly.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And you know, I just want to comment on like your idea of this idea of dominion restored, you know, we were created to hold dominion, you know, you used the analogy last week of that's the torch we get to carry. And it's like the whole reason for this conversation is I want to carry that as well as I possibly can. You know, like we've been given the gift of being able to carry a torch of dominion over our family and leadership and our family leadership and our jobs and our friend groups and over children, whatever it might be. And we're given the torch of being able to hold that and carry that. And so like doing the best that we can is the only option, you know? The second thing I'd add is, you know, when we look at, you said sharpen your axe, and I think that's excellent. And I think for me, I've been doing self-analysis that the best way to sharpen your axe is to be constantly challenging yourself. Like I look at Tony Robbins, and I just listened to a podcast from him a couple of weeks ago. And he talked about, he's moving towards this new goal of feeding, I think it was 10 or a billion people or something. He was like, he did 320 million in his lifetime. And he's like, this next 10 years, I'm doing a billion people. And it's the people that are challenging themselves, that are sharpening the axe, that are worthy of being, of following, you know, worthy of actually leading a group of people or just their family, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I would say I'll give you one word of caution is this is why when I started earlier, I said becoming a great leader, it begins with becoming a great follower. And this is why it's so important for the person that we follow to be Jesus, because have you experienced any hustle culture in your learnings?
Oh, all the time. All the time.
So the Bible says there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to destruction. And so what I would say is yes, always be challenging ourselves, but not to the point where we don't rest, not to the point where we don't recoup. See, the reason that Jesus is such a great example is because in his assignment, he was never too busy to speak to his father. He was never too busy to get away. He was never too busy to just tell people no. He was never too busy to lose the connection with the one, which is the actual reason he was here, to restore our relationship and our connection to the one. And so I know in my life, like my pursuit of success, my pursuit of being a great leader, my pursuit of you know, all those things that guys like us want, they come at a danger. And in my life, I've experienced the danger because I failed in that way at times. And so I would say like, listen, Tony Robbins has some good things to say and other guys like him. But the thing that I think we always have to be careful of is like in the Bible, it says a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And so we were here, we were created, we were put on this earth for God's image. He wanted to display in the visible world his image as it, you know, as it, a physical manifestation of his image, right? Dominion is what he gave us. It's what he put us here for in the beginning. And then sin broke our ability to do that in his image properly. And then Jesus came and he died and he rose again. And at least the way I think about it is so much of what he did that for was to give us the ability to, again, show his image to the world, to restore the dominion mandate. And I think we lose that a lot in our Christian culture. But I think it's real. I think that, and again, I'm not talking about ruling the world. I'm talking about dominion over our assignment. And so my point is that the way that we get our instructions, the place that we get our marching orders, the only way that we can do this in a way where a little leaven, a little self-centeredness, a little worldliness, a little of our flesh doesn't leaven the whole lump, is to follow him and him alone. Because the whole world, man, it will tell you, hey, you want to be a great leader, work 24/7, work 7 days a week, work 365 days a year. Mm. And you might get the cars, you might get the houses, you might get the bank accounts, you might get the stocks, you might get the businesses, and you'll finish the race and you'll have failed. And so will have I. And so I think for us, part of why I want to do these conversations is just like, what does it look like to hold in balance in a healthy way this desire to have dominion, this desire to lead, this desire to succeed, this desire to create and build and to have dominion, to gain the world, dare I say it, without losing your soul. And I'm not saying like I want to be a billionaire or really gain the world, but I'm just saying it in my mind's eye, like, what does it look like to live full of fruit and yet not lose sight of the main thing? And so anybody watching this, listening to this 40 minutes later, I hope you got something valuable, and I hope you do get challenged, and I hope you will take those challenges, and I hope you'll run with them, and I hope you'll begin to change your life and become the person that God created you to become. And I hope that you won't listen to me or listen to Jake as the guru. I hope that you won't follow me and Jake any closer than you would follow the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, because I'm going to tell you stuff every once in a while that's probably not right. And so will Jake. But the one person who won't is Jesus, and he speaks in his word, and he speaks through his Holy Spirit, and he'll speak to you. And so I appreciate you being here, and I know Jake appreciates you being here. If you like this video, we'd love it if you'd share it with somebody and help us spread the word. And we'd love to hear what you think about it in the comments if you want to share a thought, or maybe you have a different perspective, or maybe you have a question that Jake and I can tackle in a future conversation. And again, subscribe, like, share with your friends, and we'll see you next time.